Welcome to the Better Learning Podcast. My name is Kevin Stoller, the host of the show and also the owner of K12.com. This podcast is all about connecting educators across the spectrum, whether you're K-12, public, private, charter, or higher education, or corporate learning. It's all about trying to learn from each other on what's worked and how to help other educators. And I have with me today Dr. Corey C. Miller. Welcome.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me.
We've had conversations in the past, and they've been really interesting, so I appreciate you being on the show. I'll give you a little bit of background. So you've been an assistant professor, author, leadership educator, currently at Wright State University, and what really piqued my interest in what we had, that was some of the writings that you've done, especially into Gen Z and kind of the up-and-coming generation and how they learn and how they interact. So if you want to kind of jump in a little bit and kind of tell me a little bit of your history and how you got into the interest that you're currently working on, I think it would be good for the audience to hear that.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've taken quite a deep dive into understanding the post-millennial generation, Generation Z. It started back in 2013, and I was working at a university at the time, working as the director of leadership programs. And what I found fascinating is that we recruited students for our leadership program during our summer orientation. It was the only time you could really get into the four-year program. And so we'd set up a booth and students and their parents would come around and say, oh, what is this program? I want to learn more. And I had been working there for many, many years, since about 2002 was the first summer I started working there. And so, you know, here we are at 2013, it's 11 years later, and I noticed that something was really different about the questions that we were getting asked by students, the interest that they seemed to convey, the reasons for maybe wanting to participate in the leadership program. And it caught me off guard so much that I actually said, I think something's going on here. So I went back and I got all over Google and tried to figure out, what is happening this year? Is there like a full moon, a solar eclipse? Like, why are these students so different? And what I came across was a generational breakdown. And I thought, well, you know, this is interesting. I know I'm a Gen Xer and, you know, I know the millennials are here. I worked in higher ed, you know, from Gen X all the way through. And I said, well, look at this. You know, so I kept finding reports that said that the first year of birth of Generation Z was supposed to be around 1995. And so it was like 1995, well, it's 2013. So it made them about, 17, 18. I'm like, well, these might be the students that are coming to orientation. So usually generational shifts aren't that stark. I mean, that's pretty much kind of unheard of. You don't just stop one year and then start the next year with some kind of different profile. But for me, it was enough to say something is really different about this group. Let me check it out. And so I started to get really interested in the generation, and I went back to my staff and I said, we've got to really talk about this, because if we have a generation of students that are coming in that are looking for something different, have different types of aspirations, values, they communicate differently, then we've got to make sure that our programs are in a place that are value added for them, that are making a difference. And I had already had this conversation. Go ahead.
Yeah. What were some of those characteristics that you were seeing that was so different from previous years?
First of all, they came up to our table and asked about the leadership program instead of their mom or dad coming up to the table and asking about it. So first I noticed just their engagement and their level of interest was shifted. It was, you know, instead of, you know, the parent saying, come on over here, check out this leadership program. It was more like the student saying, mom, dad, Uncle Jim, whoever, come over here, check out this leadership program. And so that was one of the first things. The second thing was that they seemed very social change oriented. Like they wanted to know that what they were going to be doing was going to make a difference for other people. They kept asking about opportunities to work on projects that would have large scale impact. Like they kept asking things around like leadership for what? Is it just about me being better as a leader? Or is it really about what I can do with my leadership capacities to influence and help others? And so a lot of those kinds of questions kept coming up. And we had an essay portion of the application where they got to write about issues they cared about and how they wanted to impact the world. And even the responses to those essays were just different than what we had seen previously. They felt different. And so as I was saying, I had been with this program for a number of years, and we had the shift from when we went from Gen X to millennials and had to make some drastic changes in our programs to make sure we met the needs of that group. And I thought, well, we didn't even see this coming. Nobody's even talking about them. We better be on the front lines and the forefront of, you know, making these changes and making this, you know, program the best that it could be. So we're not trying to play catch up and say, why aren't they joining? We can instead say, hey, we're already ahead of the curve on this.
Okay. So tell me what that journey has been like. What are some of the things that you were looking at and ultimately the findings that you came up with?
Well, the first thing that happened was that summer I got all over the internet and said, all right, this is Generation Z. Who are these people? So I started finding anything and everything I could about them. And I did a training for my staff and we had these conversations about kind of an internal audit of our programs. And shortly after that, I had a graduate student at the time, Megan Grace, who's now the co-author of our publications. And she said, I'm really interested in doing some more kind of in-depth research on this. And so for the year of 2013, 2014, we ended up really kind of looking at Generation Z through the lens of other people's research. And really at the time, most of the research that was out was market research because they didn't have anything in higher ed yet because they had just come to higher ed. So most everything was all about, you know, how they buy things, how to sell them things, what kind of brands they like. But it was and somewhat translatable to making sense in higher ed. But really where the kind of the rubber meets the road for us was in summer 2014 when Megan and I decided to do our own study. And we didn't do it because either of us were planning on writing a book or speaking on the topic or anything. We just were simply interested in this population. We wanted to know more about them and we wanted to use that information to make our programs better. So we elicited the help of 14 other institutions, so 15 institutions total, and public, private, 2-year and 4-year, just kind of anyone who would sign on with us at the time. And we said, will you forward a survey link to your students? And what we didn't realize was at the time we had designed our survey to be both quantitative and qualitative. And, you know, in retrospect, that was such a good move for us because not a lot of people study this generation from a qualitative perspective. Most of them do a lot of the numerical, check the box, you know, what percent. And we did some of that as well. But our findings really gave voice to things that other reports had found, other studies had found, and even our own study had found. And so we could understand beyond just how many or what, but we could understand why and how. And they would share these stories that were just really, really telling about this generation. So our first iteration of the study came in fall of 2014, and we ended up finding other studies that were launching right around the same time. We have the countless resources and research studies that we also tapped into. But we found that a lot of them said much of the same stuff. I mean, some of the big findings that we really kind of jump onto is how they like to learn, which we found was intrapersonal or self-reflective versus group work. They how they communicate. They prefer in-person rather than any other form of digital communication, even though it seems like all they do is text. Really, in person is what they crave. We found that in terms of the way that they like to use technology is that they have multiple social media platforms and they use them all for different purposes, as opposed to most millennials and Gen Xers who might, you know, have like Facebook and use that for everything or Twitter and use it for everything. Gen Z has multiple platforms that they use. And then the other big finding that we had, in addition to other smaller findings about, you know, relationships and other pieces of information just about their daily lives. But the other big finding was that they really want to create an impact in their communities, but they're not necessarily interested in doing typical community service work. So whereas millennials are a very strong community service oriented generation, like to volunteer a lot of time, Generation Z says, I don't know that I really want to go volunteer to address the symptoms of a problem when I could basically work towards eradicating the problem altogether. So, I mean, that kind of took our whole service learning component in our leadership program for a spin, and we had to think about what did that mean for engaging our students. So, I mean, we found a number of findings, and, you know, they're listed in, you know, and discussed all throughout the chapters of our book, Generation Z Goes to College. But for me, I think those four findings were really the kind of the crux of the mentality of how this generation is considerably different than millennials per se, and I compare them to millennials because we're literally coming right off of millennials as our traditional age students. So that seems to be the most obvious comparative group. But yeah, so it's been really interesting. We've done another study since then. So fall of 2014, we did our study. We got a lot of other people's results, put together a book. It came out in January of 16. And then this last spring, we actually put together another study, a much, much larger study, all qualitative. It was called Generation Z Stories Study. And we asked 7 open-ended questions. And it was things like, you know, what motivates you to get up in the morning? Or how's your, you know, how do you think your generation might change the world? Kind of big, heady questions. And we had 50 colleges and universities from US, Canada, and Mexico sign on to send the link out to their students, public, private, 2-year, 4-year, religious, secular, the whole range, from nearly every state in the country as well. So we had a quite a big representative population there. And we spent literally the whole spring semester reading their stories and coming up with more and more findings and just, again, kind of reiterating what we found in some of the earlier work, but giving voice and giving meaning to that quantitative data that so many groups continue to put out, but being able to provide some more explanatory parts to it. So that was what we did in the spring. And then this summer, we wrote another book called Generation Z Leads, and it's about how to develop the leadership capacities of those in Generation Z. And that was a fun project. That's more of a kind of best practices how-to book as opposed to our first book, which was more just kind of insights. And then right now, we are working on our next book, which is Generation Z, A Century in the Making. And this is going to be much broader than our first book and include pretty much any and every element you can think about a day in the life of Generation Z, from career aspirations to spirituality to how they're entertained. But we're doing it all in the context of the last 100 years and seeing how the context of the world that they live in now, basically how the context has shaped what they believe and who they've become and who they are. And so as the youngest of 6 living generations, what does that mean from the oldest of the generations that is living today all the way to themselves? How have they been influenced and how does that help them, you know, see and navigate the world? So that's where we are. It's been really busy. I had no idea at the time that we were going to be going down a road like this, that here we are. So that's really kind of up to date.
Nice. That's great hearing all that really interesting work that you've been working on. Definitely looking forward to that new book too. One, obviously we'll make sure that we have links in the show notes of this podcast. You'll be able to click to the books and be able to read through that. But the one that came out this summer, as far as more of those practical things, have you seen the changes or been able to make changes to that environment at the college level based on some of the findings?
Well, I mean, I definitely use many of the practices in the work that I do, just as an individual educator. So it's kind of an interesting vantage point about the work that I get the fortune of doing with studying Generation Z is that, you know, on one hand, I'm a researcher, but in another sense, I'm a practitioner. And so, you know, there's a lot of people who research populations that they never, ever interact with. And for me, I get the benefit of, again, researching them and then literally going to class and having them sitting there. And so I get to use some of the tools and things that the research is pointing me to. So the fact that, for instance, the students, I discussed this actually in the Chronicle of Higher Education article just the other day, but it was about this idea that students are really connected to their phones, and we know that. And the question is, should we ban cell phones in classrooms? And, you know, I have sort of a mixed opinion on that because, you know, as somebody who doesn't really identify as being kind of addicted to my phone or, you know, at least even dependent on it really in certain ways, I'm fine going in and being told to shut my phone off for a couple hours. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, I've got students in my class that, you know, for them, that's the appendage, an appendage of themselves. And
right.
Telling them to turn it off creates a great sense of anxiety. And so the question is, would I rather have someone who might, you know, periodically access their phone in class versus having someone where I've literally forced them to turn off their phone and then they sit there completely anxious the whole time? Which one is a better learner? which student is getting more out of the class. And so so are there ways that I can incorporate the use of their phone, even if it just doesn't mean doing the things that they like doing on it, like watching YouTube videos or Instagram or something, but just that they like to touch it, know it's there. So I do an exercise where I have students go out and, you know, take pictures on their phone and come back and talk about how they reflect their strengths. And for them, it's, again, it's an opportunity for them to kind of touch, feel, and interact with that device, even if it's, again, not in like a social way, but in an educational way. They don't feel as anxious, or at least they don't seem like they're as anxious. And so for me, you know, it's good for me to be aware of the fact that telling someone to turn their phone off can create a great deal of anxiety. Now, the bigger question is, can we help support them so that they don't get to a point, or people in general don't get to a point where they're anxious when they don't have access to their phone? That's a much bigger question that we as a society need to tackle. I can't per se do that in my class, but what I can do is try to find ways to allow my students to, again, connect with their devices in meaningful ways. So I, like I said, for me, it's nice to have that vantage point where I say, okay, well, here's some recommendations of things that, well, research is telling us that might be helpful to know. And then here are some practices that might actually align with that. And so that's been really, really helpful for me. And my work is my laboratory to see, would this really work in real life, you know, or is this just interesting information that we found out about this generation?
Yeah. So hearing your timing of, you know, you saw this change kind of 2013, 2014. So this group is, you know, at the point where they're going to be graduating college and entering the workforce. Any recommendations or things? Because there's always a lot of discussion of the millennials entering the workforce and how companies are either kind of embracing it or fighting it. How do you see the change on this next generation coming out of college?
And that's a great question. And for those the oldest in the generation, they were our spring of 2017 graduating class. So they are out in full force now. And then there's also, you know, a plethora of Gen Z that's came right out of college or a two-year degree that's already been in the workforce for a while. And even those that worked full-time and still, you know, are in college right now. So there's such a mix of them, but, you know, yeah, they're in our workforce. And the question is, what can we expect of them? What should we know? And not so much because I think that organizations or bosses should, you know, have to change everything they're doing to cater to this new group of students or, you know, or graduates. I think it's really this idea that just the more we know about each other, the better we're going to be able to connect. And so I often get people who say to me, well, you're always telling, you know, educators and, you know, and supervisors and, you know, organizations that we should, you know, be prepared to adapt to this generation. But what they don't see is, you know, all the sessions that I do for students that tell them, hey, Gen Z students, here's what the world looks like. And you sitting and, you know, texting on your phone during a job interview, which research has found that Gen Z is the generation that thinks that that's the most okay, you know, that's not going to fly. And so we have to kind of figure out, what do we know about each other? And how can we find ways to maximize that rather than think of it as a detriment? One of the things that's really interesting about this particular generation is their desire to work in groups. They don't have much of a desire to work in groups. If you think about them, they've grown up in a K-12 system where we got all excited about creating little pods and little, you know, buddies and, you know, collaborative work groups and stuff. And they're sort of burnt out of that. So they come into the workplace and many of them want to have an independent project to go do on their own. That's tough when you're being supervised potentially by a mid-level manager who's a millennial, who millennials are the collaborative generation, they're the sharing generation. They love to, you know, kind of work together. And, you know, does that create a rift in terms of work styles? You know, does it make it look like, you know, one isn't trusting of the other or what, you know, what have you? But, you know, we're going to see some interesting things based on just who else is in the workplace, but then Generation Z is going to come in with their own ideas of what's appropriate, what's not. Some research has pointed to the idea that this generation has had like physically less time socially interacting with people face to face than any other generation. And you can just look at that as just a math question. When you're on, you know, when I grew up, we didn't have the opportunity to be online. So it was always face-to-face. Whereas now even spending an hour a day online is one less hour that potentially these young folks could be connecting with each other and practicing their social skills. So the question is, do they have the kind of social skills that are needed to navigate the workplace? And again, this doesn't apply to all people in this age group, because there's so many very, very socially savvy people. But the question is like, how are these things around their upbringing and their own experiences and context going to come back and show up in the workplace in ways that we're not even prepared to think about at this point in time? So I think if, you know, talking to supervisors and talking to organizations and employers, my thoughts are twofold. One is Generation Z's parental generation is Generation X. Not all parents of Generation Z are in Generation X, but a large share of them are. They're also, Gen Z's also being raised like Gen X is. So you're going to find that Gen X and Gen Z, for the most part, really get along at work because they're very similar to each other. So the first thing you're going to see is that you might, like, especially for baby boomers, you're going to start to see a little bit of familiarity. Oh, this looks like we already had those folks come in some ways. So there's going to be some of that. But the second thing is that with potentially six generations in the workforce, probably more realistically five, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for miscommunication, misinterpretation, and just not maximizing the opportunities to work together. And so, you know, before prejudging anyone or before applying any of these trends as a holistic policy for your company or organization, just literally sit down and talk to each other. Figure out how you like to be motivated. Figure out how you like to be recognized. Figure out how you like to work in teams and groups or on projects together. Do you want to work remotely? Do you not want to work remotely? Is that a possibility? How much do you like to be followed up with? All those things are going to be really important. And I feel like part of the generational rift is that those conversations just plainly just don't happen, period. Or at least to the extent that they should. So I think that those are just some of the things that just to kind of keep a heads up on as these folks enter the workforce.
Oh, good points. Yeah, those are really good things to be thinking about. And, you know, and I'm thinking of it on the business side, but also, you know, our impact that we have on the education environment. So what do you see as next? Like, as far as like when you're classifying the Gen Z, what age group is that going through right now or years born? Like, do you think it's going to be a pretty big window? Because you're right. I mean, we see collaboration and everything is what everyone is pushing towards right now. You know, in the K through 12 arena.
Right. Well, you know, right now, I mean, I can tell you one thing. After starting to do generational research, I realized that the only thing that us generational researchers can agree on is that we can't agree on the start and stop dates of generations. you look online and there's still no common start date of baby boomers. That was like 60 something years ago, right? But what I can tell you is that that most people have it from the mid 90s to the early 2000s. And so we found most of the research we've come across has been 1995 to 2010, which comparatively is a short span of time compared to, you know, maybe the silent generation or those much older, even baby boomers. But technology advances so rapidly that generations are just becoming shorter. And the reason is because generations are shaped less by dates and more by context. So the oldest of those in Generation Z, if born in 1995, were in kindergarten on 9/11. And so you think about these kind of pockets of history where, you know, I'm not saying that first graders really remember 9/11, probably not, but, you know, there's these breaking points in history. You know, Gen Xers, you know, we can remember the Challenger, and, you know, baby boomers can remember when JFK was shot. And so these contexts really play into when the spread of dates are. So if we're looking at 95 to 2010, that would make them as young as our second graders right now. So we have still a long way to go of this generation, and it's probably pretty likely that those in second grade are going to be fairly different when they enter into like their adolescence and teen years than the oldest of Gen Z was, because just circumstances change. But you'll probably see some similarities because they are post 9/11 recession housing bubble babies whose oldest first election was this last presidential election. So there's some pretty strong commonalities that this group is going to have. So educators are going to see this group continue on through for a while. And if you're wondering who the youngest are, the ones that from, first grade and under, also the ones that haven't been born yet, some are already referring them to them as Generation Alpha, as a placeholder. So they don't really have a profile quite yet because they're quite young, but we need to keep an eye on them because they are essentially, in many cases, millennial children. Older millennials have Gen Z children, but really, again, the parental generation of Generation Alpha will be millennials. And so we'll kind of see how this, the parent's influence really shapes how the kids grow up, because Gen X looks, Gen Z looks an awful lot like Gen X. And so, again, interesting things to keep in mind as we, continue to watch these cohorts grow up.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, good. I know you mentioned a few of the things you're working on. You have another book coming out. What are some of the other things that you're working on that you either need help or feedback or anyone in the audience can do to kind of help you?
Yeah, well, great. Well, if anybody knows a good publisher, we're probably at the third way point of our book, which has been really exciting to write about. And so we're always looking for research or studies or reports or anything that people might have come across that are related to Generation Z. Specifically, what we've been really getting a hold of, which has been great, is a very large data sets that were not conducted on Generation Z, but we've been able to disaggregate the findings by age. And so we've been able to take some great data sets and then narrow them down by just Generation Z and do some comparative stuff. So if anybody's out there, especially in the educational realm or organizational realm, that has any access to large data sets that's disaggregated by age or that we can, that's great stuff. So we definitely are looking for that, because one of the things that's really important for us in the work that we do is that our first book was like this, and our second book will be even more so, is we want to be representative of as much information as possible about this generation. We're aware of the fact that a lot of people like to write about their own stuff and only their own stuff, and I can respect that. That's their prerogative. But for us, our studies are intertwined into our book and our books in ways that are in some cases even less than some of the other reports and findings and research that we've gotten a hold of. So we have hundreds and hundreds of sources in this next book of great reports, everything from banking to retailing to education to mental health studies. And so, we're really trying to provide a really solid snapshot that says, hey, listen, here's what we know about this generation, and 62 studies have found this, because I think that gives more strength to the message. And so, of course, we're looking for that. So that's really kind of the main thing right now. The only other thing we have coming up is I'm excited to announce that I'll be speaking at the TEDx Dayton event on October 20th.
Oh, cool.
So that will be, if anybody is in Dayton and wants to go, it's on October 20th, but they should be recording all of those and then having a link, and I'll be sharing that link through social media. But my talk will be focusing on Generation Z and how they plan to create change kind of around the systems that most of us are used to creating change within. They're going to be creating change around it. And so, again, I won't give you the punchline quite yet. You'll have to wait to either watch it live or watch the recording, but that's exciting as well. We're just trying to get the message out about this generation and just help as many people as possible prepare for them, work with them, relate to them, leverage their capacities, maximize their interactions, and just get to know this, this great new young group of people that's, coming into adulthood right now.
That's great. Well, we'll make sure that we have all those links here. What's your preferred way for people to contact you?
Definitely through email. That's great. And then I usually like to just, any kind of things that people can send, sources, references, reports, anything. I love all of that. We chronicle all of that. And so that would be really helpful.
All right. Well, sounds good. Well, Dr. Seemiller, I appreciate your time. It's always good hearing the things that you're working on. Just a little note to anyone listening here, if you could rate the show and hit the subscribe button so you get future episodes. And then also, if you want to be a guest on the show, or if you have any recommendations of who would be a good guest on the show that has a different approach or a different view that they've been doing the education realm, we're always looking to have a good group of people and guests on the show. So, well, I appreciate your time. And I should always end it this way. Is there anything I didn't ask you that I should have been asking about?
No, I think this is great. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, great. Well, sounds good. Well, you have a good rest of the day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. You too.
Before you go, I wanted to mention that Shoop Media is the company that does our podcast. They do all the editing and show notes and getting everything uploaded and all the images. So we appreciate their help. And if you are interested in doing a podcast, and you're not sure where to start, you have a good idea or something that you've always wanted to do, I'd reach out to them. They do a great job of basically taking it all off your plate and taking all the time that it would normally take to do a podcast out of your hands, and they do it all for you. So you basically just have to do the recordings, and they'll take it from there. So if you do want to reach out to Shoop Media, there will be a link on there as well.